This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Als Gründerinnen und Gründer willst du vor allem eins, schnell vorankommen. Egal ob beim Product Market Fit, deinem nächsten Schritt oder deinem ersten großen Enterprise Deal. Doch mit KI, die Entwicklung immer schneller macht, steigen auch die Anforderungen an Sicherheit. Und das früher als je zuvor. Wer Themen wie Security und Compliance richtig angeht, ermöglicht Wachstum. Wer zu lange wartet, bremst es aus. Deshalb setzen viele Startups früh auf Wanta und wachsen sicher weiter. Wanta macht es einfach mit tiefen Integrationen, starker Automatisierung und kontinuierlichem Monitoring, das mithält. Und wenn es ans Audit geht, seien Wochen bereit, nicht erst in Monaten. Jetzt starten auf wanta.com.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Welcome to the Briefing Room with me, David Aronovich. You step inside and join me in getting briefed on the big issues by people who know what they're on about. And when you've been briefed, please let us know what you think by writing a review or rating us on iTunes or your podcast provider. And if you'd like, please recommend us to just about anyone you can think of, really. And a thanks to those of you who've recently reviewed us, including Marty555 and SLC247. If you find this programme useful, you might like other editions of The Briefing Room. For example, you could listen to the one we did about the parole board in light of the announcement that victims of the serial sex offender John Warboys can challenge the parole board's decision to release him from prison. This week, I'm getting briefed on why there's a crisis in local government in England and what that could mean for you. So, take your seat in The Briefing Room.
It's rubbish, isn't it, the council? All the money they spend on silly things and they've got no money for important things, have they?
I think it's awful, absolutely awful, and I think somebody should be held to account for it. You know, they're in a position of trust, serving the people, and they haven't done it. They haven't.
I'm a bit upset, actually, that basically the roads are in an appalling state and now they're just not going to get repaired. Social care is on its knees. And that's just going to get worse, which means that bed blocking's going to continue to get worse. So the hospitals are going to end up so full that people can't cope.
When I watch, I think people who are less fortunate than us must be having a really, really tough time because I don't think the money's been spent investing in the social services and services for people of Northampton and the county surrounding it.
The people of Northamptonshire, they're being very unimpressed. This is because the County Council had just announced it would not be able to balance its budget by the end of the financial year and had put a block on any new expenditure. Earlier this week, the seven MPs in the county called for government commissioners to come in and take over. In this week's Briefing Room, I want to find out whether Northamptonshire is an isolated case or if, as some people suggest, there's a wider crisis in local government finances. But first, some basic facts about how we pay to keep our roads swept and our bins emptied. Here's my colleague Marie Keyworth.
A quick look at any local council website will give you a good picture of what it does. Pick one at random and they'll invite you to click for information on adult social care, animal welfare, pests and pollution, bins and recycling, births, deaths and marriages, and the list goes on. Councils can run your leisure centre, your theatre, your local car park, your library and your bus service. They deal with potholes, keep streetlights on and provide school meals for your children. They give builders planning permission and they license pubs and taxis. So how do they pay for it? This is the fun part. Put simply, councils get their money from three main sources: grants from central government, business rates and council tax. So let's start with council tax. It's calculated based on the value of the property you live in, and the council gets to keep all of it. but central government does limit the amount they can raise it by. Another income for councils is business rates. This is a tax on buildings like shops, offices, factories and pubs. It's collected locally by the councils, and then all of it is sent to central government. The centre then sends half of it back to the local councils, where it's shared out between them through a fiendishly complicated system of redistribution and grants. Central government does get to keep the other half of all the business rates collected and can do what it wants with it, although some of it does come back to councils as grants. We'll be hearing a lot about changes to business rates later. The last important source of income for local councils is grants from central government. These can be broken down into two types. The first is money given to councils for a specific purpose. The biggest chunk of this money goes to pay for education and housing benefit. In fact, councils don't have any real control over much of this money, but instead pass it directly on to other organisations or people who use it. The second type of central government funding is called the Revenue Support Grant. This money can be used for anything, with no conditions attached, and pays for things like libraries, parks, and keeping the lights on in the town hall. Now, I recommend you get familiar with the phrase Revenue Support Grant, because we'll be hearing a lot about it in the programme. That's because the government is phasing it out completely over the next couple of years, and they're still discussing how to replace it. And before I forget, you might be thinking, I just paid for parking in the town centre. What about that? Well, you're right. Councils do make a good chunk of money through charging for things like car parking, planning applications, and the late return of library books. So how does all this break down in percentages? Based on last year's figures, 20% of income came from council tax. They got 17% of their money from business rates and other government grants. The revenue support grant made up 6%. And finally, 11% of council money came from fees and charges. The rest of their income, nearly 50%, was money from central government that councils have little control over. Instead, it passed straight through them and onto things like schools and people claiming housing benefit.
Marie Keyworth. And with that in mind, let's go back to Northamptonshire. Sam Reed is the politics reporter for BBC Radio Northampton. I asked him first why everyone was angry with the council.
Well, this kind of comes down to the inherent argument in all this, that who is to blame for this situation? Is it historic underfunding by central government, or is it decisions made by this local council that have led to this situation? And it is true that until very recently, the leader of the council, Heather Smith, and other senior councillors were saying they would balance the books this year. Then this week we had this massive warning that they might not do that, and that is a change.
Now, what did this warning amount to?
It's a ban on almost all new spending. So the council can't enter new contracts to do stuff, to run services. All it can do is new payments for keeping vulnerable people safe. That's the only new contracts it can enter into. However, staff are still paid. So libraries are open, schools are open, potholes are still fixed under existing contracts. So on the streets of Northamptonshire, you don't really notice any difference. But that shouldn't hide the fact this is a really serious measure that hasn't been taken for almost 20 years anywhere in the country.
And maybe a bit early for the effects of this to be seen, but when they are seen, what will they be?
Well, the problem with balancing the books this year means it creates even more financial pressure on the council for next year's budget, where it has these big cuts plans. For example, there are plans to remove almost all bus subsidy. Now, bus subsidy is support for routes that just aren't profitable. They often go through villages where the service wouldn't make money for the bus company on its own. So if you take that away, that support, the bus company say we just won't run the routes. And I've been travelling on some of those buses through Northamptonshire villages, meeting people on those buses who say, if this bus stops, I'm going to have to quit my job. I can't afford a taxi on the wages I'm on. And if this bus doesn't work, I can't get to Northampton or Kettering or Daventry to do my job. So that's the kind of serious impact.
Now, what particular local circumstances have given? I mean, obviously, a lot of councils have been in financial trouble. What has tipped? What are the kind of things that have tipped Northamptonshire over?
Well, all councils say they're under massive pressure, particularly on social care. But Northamptonshire says it's facing even bigger pressures. Northamptonshire has the fastest growing population of over 65-year-olds in the country. And that's not because we've become the new Eastbourne where everyone's travelling to retire. That's because we had this population explosion 30 years ago and all those people are getting old. And the council ends up footing the bill for a lot of that social care. And that's a really big problem. The other issue that's particularly an issue here is children's services, vulnerable children that need to be taken into care. And there's a surprising twist to this for Northamptonshire that saw a really big increase in this problem. And that's unaccompanied child asylum seekers that arrive on the backs of lorries. Now, you might think they all arrive and just end up in Dover. Well, that's not quite true. And the reason for that is if you have a lorry that gets off the ferry at Dover and travels up towards the M1, after about 2 hours, when lorry drivers have to take a legal break, there's a service station about 2 hours up the road called Watford Gap, which is in Northamptonshire. And so they often stop there for a break. And then what happens? The unaccompanied child migrants or asylum seekers get off that lorry and suddenly they're in Northamptonshire. And that's been Northamptonshire County Council's issue to deal with. And so those kind of pressures have built up here.
So Northamptonshire has a child services problem because of where lorry drivers need to take a pee.
That's exactly right. It's odd, isn't it? And recently, the council's managed to persuade other councils to take on some of this problem because they say the fact we have a service station here where everyone needs to go to the toilet shouldn't put this extra pressure on our children's services.
And are there any other local circumstances that exacerbated this problem or that making people particularly cross? Because things you've mentioned aren't things you'd necessarily want to blame the local council for, and yet everybody you said up there is really furious with them.
Yeah, and one of the things the leader of the council, Heather Smith, has said consistently is we have a much lower income than some similar places for council tax. Now, she would say that's to do with the makeup of the size of houses here and various historic reasons. But what her critics would say is around the time of the coalition government, the government encouraged councils to keep council tax low. And here in Northamptonshire, they froze the council tax at 0% year after year, in fact, boasting that they had the lowest council tax in the country. That went down very well at the time. Then when they realised they needed more money, the government started saying, right, you can raise council tax by 2% and then 5% and now 6% without holding a referendum, without needing public support. But the problem was Northamptonshire is raising those small percentages on a very low base because they were so proud of keeping council tax low. And so that historic decision has really riled a lot of people.
Sam Reid of BBC Radio Northampton on what's going on in his patch. What about the rest of the country, though? Just how big a problem have the rest of us got? To help me out with that, I'm joined now in the briefing room by Rob Whiteman, the Chief Executive of the Chartered Institute of Public Finance and Accountancy, and Jennifer Glover of the Local Government Information Unit, a think tank paid for by local authorities. Rob Whiteman, can you explain how we've got to this pass with local government financing?
So since 2010, local government has borne the brunt of cuts, and that the local government has been cut more than any other part of the state. And government has reduced its funding to councils by well over 40%, and allowing for the fact that councils have been able to raise their council tax a little bit or get some other income, councils in real terms have faced cuts of 35%. That's how much less money they're spending than 8 years ago. And of course, once you get to this degree of the cycle, councils are beginning to find it really tough.
Jennifer, do you think there are many other councils that are in or about to be in Northampton's position?
We've conducted a survey, the State of Local Government Finance Survey, which is an annual project that we run, getting the sense of how councils are financially. And that indicates that things aren't looking so great for a large proportion of them. So nearly all of them are planning to raise council tax and increase charging, and two-thirds will be forced to dip into their reserves. So it's not a very happy picture, and 80% say they fear for their financial sustainability.
Do you think, Jennifer, a lot of them have run through the kind of efficiencies which they can have made?
Yeah, I think that point maybe came a couple of years ago, to be honest. They've cut the fat and now they're cutting into what they would call legally non-essential services, but to communities they're essential, things like parks, libraries, youth centres.
Remember that it's illegal for a council to run into deficit and spend money that it doesn't have. And it now gets to the point, as we see in Northamptonshire, which if it reaches that point, it has to freeze expenditure in order to say what will happen next. And indeed, the government has appointed an inspector. Well, that's quite unique, isn't it? Remember that because of the pressures in the NHS, over half of trusts are running in deficit. So local government is under this unique straitjacket. And of course, the government hasn't liked to admit over the last 8 years that councils are making cuts because they're being cut by the government. So actually they've blamed councils. They've said you've got reserves. And actually, of course, you do need money in reserves when you're making cuts because more of your budget is at risk. If you're not able to deliver all the savings that you've planned for, if you haven't got money in reserves, you run into this position of being in an illegal position. So the problem there is that they're running out of reserves.
Can I just get a sense, Jennifer, of if more and more councils do get into a Northamptonshire-type position, what actually is at hazard from the point of view of the listener who's listening to this programme and the services which they've enjoyed or expect up until now?
So the impact for everyday people in this country is enormous. For instance, Central Bedfordshire this week announced that bins would only be collected every 3 weeks. Places are saying that they're going to be charging more for garden waste collection. Libraries will be open one day instead of 3 days a week. One council said that they will be closing down the play equipment in local parks because the maintenance cost is too expensive. So there's a huge knock-on effect for this.
Rob Wightman, let's go into what the government has been doing on local government finance in recent years, because it's a bit of a story, isn't it?
Over the last 8 years, government has cut back the resources that it gives to local government. It's called Revenue Support Grant. And one of the ways that the Treasury has balanced the books is to take money away from local government. So for many councils, they receive no Revenue Support Grant. And indeed, over the next couple of years, that process will be completed.
So they've reduced Revenue Support Grant steadily and they want to get it down to zero. So that will go altogether.
Yes.
So what replaces it?
So then what happens is that councils are funded by their council tax, their business rates, other fees and charges that they may raise, or from other government grants for specific areas. The government at the moment keeps half of the business rates that are collected. So councils collect business rates off businesses, and the government keeps half of it. And the government has said, well, over the next couple of years, we will let councils keep another 25%, so that by 2021, councils will be keeping 75% of their business rates. It's complicated, though, because the government has said, well, this won't just be new money, extra money. We're going to ask local government to fund some things that presently we, the government, pay for. So councils aren't at all sure at the moment that they're going to get extra resources by retaining their business rates, because they're going to be asked to cover other things like public health, for example, which the government funds.
So have the councils got extra business rates so far that covers the loss in Revenue Support Grant? In other words, has the government taken away with one hand but given back with the other?
No, it's taken away more than it's given back. The councils that collect the most business rates might not be the councils that have got the greatest need on expenditure. The areas that have got more elderly that need social care, that have more children that need to be put into care. So the government needs to run alongside letting councils keep their business rates. It needs to run something that it calls the Fair Funding Review, where it will work out how to distribute between councils. And that bit of the process is pretty stuck.
Jennifer Glover, is that your perception as well, this progress towards replacing the Revenue Support Grant with the business rate?
Yes, that's my understanding of it as well. The narrative of public sector bodies complaining that they don't have enough money is an old one. But the thing that differentiates this narrative is that there is genuine uncertainty as to where the money will come from, where the whole pot of money will come from in 2 years' time. And that prevents any investment decisions, any proper restructuring of services so they work better, because they don't know whether they're going to see that money back.
I imagine that the situation in England and Wales and Scotland and Northern Ireland are different.
They are. And What you see, of course, is policy is increasingly diverging between the four nations of the UK. So if you think of English local government, we've seen academisation, lots of schools leaving councils to become freestanding independent bodies. That doesn't happen in other parts of the UK. Councils work very closely with the NHS, something called health and care integration, about how can the NHS and social care work more closely with each other. Essentially, there are four different ways of that happening across the UK. On the whole, England has borne more cuts. English local government has borne more cuts, but it's beginning to happen in the other nations.
Jennifer, what did you make of the financial settlement which was approved in the Commons yesterday?
So that the settlement allows councils to raise council tax by an extra percentage on top of the 2% raise they can already do without having a referendum.
So they could go up to 3%.
They can go up to 3%. The settlement also included extra money for adult social care. That was the new addition after pressure from Tory MPs saying we won't back the settlement in the House if you don't add more social care funding. So that was an interesting development.
I guess the thing on social care is, although 150 million is welcome, we see a gap in adult social care by 2021 of £3 billion. We see other gaps too for children's social services, so that by 2021, the gap for local government overall will be 5.8 billion or more. That is a massive amount of money, and there is a cliff edge for local government as it gets towards that date. And the second point to make is there are unintended consequences for other parts of the state. If elderly people are not receiving the care that they should, we see more people presenting at A&E and we see the NHS under massive crisis. So the government has got to look at the system overall, and to some extent it's cut local government more than anything else, but there are now big consequences.
Rob Whiteman and Jennifer Glover. Those, boiled down, are the problems, and they seem to be getting worse. How might they be solved, or at any rate eased? And not just in the short term, but in the longer term too. My last guest in the briefing room today is Colin Copas, who's Professor of Local Government at De Montfort University in Leicester. He's in the studio in Shrewsbury. We've heard in this programme about the complexity of local government financing, the problems that local government is having, both now and likely in the future. What are the various things that people talk about, that changes that could be made that would make things easier for local government?
Well, it depends on where you want to look, really. I mean, there are lots of lessons from overseas that we can draw on that would develop an entirely new system of local government financing. And that would mean a major overhaul of the system. The problem we have for the financing of English local government is that it has one of the most restricted tax regimes across Europe. Most of its financing comes from central government, and then what it raises locally is the business rates and the council tax. So we have a very, very narrow range. And one of the things we could look at very seriously is how we give councils a much more buoyant and expansive range of taxation powers.
What kind of things might we do to do that?
Well, if you look overseas, I mean, this isn't a fantasy list. All of these examples I can give you exist somewhere across Europe. So one of the favoured methods is a local income tax. And countries like Belgium, Denmark, Finland, Sweden all have some form of local income tax, for example.
So local income tax, what else?
Well, again, depending on where you happen to live, you could be seeing things like proceeds of car tax can go to municipalities. And there are countries that use inheritance and gift tax. So rather than that going all centrally, it can be shared between the centre and the localities. There are local sales tax.
Sales tax, how does that work?
Well, again, it is an equivalent to a local VAT, if you like. The council concerned would be able to raise a percentage on the sales of particular or all goods and services within its area.
So if I, let's say, I'm buying crisps in Camden, but if Camden and Islington could have a different local sales tax, I could find them for more or less in the borough next door.
Yeah, you're highly unlikely to think, ooh, I think I'll nip across the border to another borough just to buy some crisps. There tends to be the sort of the element of people live where they are and they shop where it's convenient. You might, for bigger goods and services, for example, find people shopping around. And I think you have to look at the nature and the geography of local government also when you're looking at some of these taxation sort of menus that exist for local government.
Do you have any favourites yourself?
Well, yeah, my personal favourite, I think, is a tourist tax. I mean, most of us will, you know, be travelling abroad for work or for leisure. You'll check out of your hotel first thing in the morning, whether it's Rome or whether it's Paris. You'll be handed your hotel bill, and at the same time, you'll be given a separate municipal tax, a tourist tax. And it's normally €1 or €2. And in some respects, this is the ultimate taxation without representation. Nobody moves to Rome or Paris because they're enraged by the amount of tax that's been levied when they've come out of a hotel. You know, people don't pour tea over the sides of boats because of the size of the tourist tax. So it does give local authorities a particular financial freedom. Of course, the argument is, well, what if we are an area that doesn't get many tourists and it'll be the usual areas that people go to that will generate the income? What I'm sort of suggesting is that if you have a basket of taxation, then you're able to use those local councillors who know their economies, are able to finesse those particular types of taxes. Simply because they exist doesn't mean to say that municipalities across Europe use these taxes. It's that they're able to.
You've outlined a series of possibilities. Given the attractiveness of some of them, and given the fact that government has done none of them, what can we conclude from that?
Well, I think because we live in one of the most centralised countries across Europe, where central government is very used to being able to control what local government does, either financially or legally, there's very little incentive for any central government of any political colour to want to change, radically change, the way in which local government is financed, or indeed is able to finance itself. Because if you look at it in this sort of way, if local government is financially autonomous, if, like in Scotland, there is a call from local government for full fiscal autonomy, then that really does narrow down the ability of central government to control what local government does. I mean, another example I would give you is an airport tax. Now, if our councils, where there were airports located within their boundaries, were able to levy, I don't know, £1 or £2 on every passenger that travelled through that airport, boroughs like Hounslow would be financially autonomous overnight. Now, I think that would terrify central government. So the fear, I think, of local government being able to generate its own income and being able then to decide how to spend it is always a worry in a political system where the centre is used to governing.
But we've heard that as a consequence of no reform or no proper reform, that we have a system of incredible complexity, which is also at the moment in the process of falling down.
Yes, that's absolutely right. When you tinker with one part of the system, you cause problems elsewhere. And it is because of the complexity of the way in which individual councils are financed by the centre that causes these sorts of problems. It would take a long time to radically reform the financing of local government, and far longer than any one government could oversee in a 5-year term of office. But if we want to do it properly, there is a need to consider a whole range of radical alternatives, as opposed to dealing with what is already an extremely complex system of financing.
In the old days, they'd have had a royal commission for this. I mean, when did we last have a royal commission on local government?
Well, the last time, you have to look back to the Layfield Commission, which was in the 1970s. There was an attempt in the early 2000s with the Lyons report, which looked at local government. Both of those two bodies favoured a local income tax. But there hasn't been, for quite some time, a government-inspired, thorough investigation of a potentially new system and a new way of financing local government. And if anything needs a set of independent-minded individuals to explore new ways of doing things, then it's certainly our system of local government finance.
How to sum that all up? Well, yes, There's a big problem. No, it's not going to get much better. Politicians lack the resolve or the incentive to take the radical action or undertake the necessary reform that might help. My gloomy thanks to Sam Reed, Marie Keyworth, Rob Whiteman, Jennifer Glover and Colin Copus. We'll be back next week. Until then, goodbye. The Briefing Room was presented by me, David Aronovich, and produced by Tim Mansell. Please let us know what you think about this programme or indeed the entire series. You can do that by writing a review or rating us on iTunes or your podcast provider, and we really do love hearing from you.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.